The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Wrestling Art with Chris Things.
Do the hammer lock.
Welcome to the latest episode of Wrestling Art with Chris Things. I am Chris Things, your host this week and every week, and we're back. We're back to our Match of the Week edition. Double Match of the Week edition, actually. Yeah, we had that awesome interview last week that I was just so bloody delighted with Lil Petey Puro, Gotch Style Bong Rips. Please make sure to check that one out if you haven't already. So good. But that means we have two matches to talk about this week. Two again weirdly contrasting matches. Anyway, we'll get into that a little bit later. Got a returning friend of the show, Bradley, back to talk all about that one. So I'll have a fun little time ahead. But man, I have had so much going on this past week in my little what's happening in the world of Chris Things segment. Boy, so it's funny with the commission work. I adore doing commission work. And it's honestly like the life's blood of me getting to do this art thing or attempting to do it on a full-time basis. But man, the I guess the nature of the commission work is you do something. You do something, especially something that you like, it's really cool and you're really stoked on. But then like it doesn't actually get released or officially launched for some time afterwards, because there's a lot of things involved to get all ready and everything like that. So I had two such ones that I've having to be keeping all hush hush about the last little while, that I've been really really stoked, and then everything just comes all at once. So in the space of 1 week, I've had both the official launch of the amazing art concept passion project basement video store, magical sanctuary for a bloody amazing VHS collection known as the Video Plant, by my friend Richard. Launch. I've been so happy with that. I did the logo for it a little ways back. I've done a few other things as well for the Video Plant space, but I'm just so happy it's out there. The brand is birthed, it's alive. People can go check it out, you know, give it a follow at Video Plant on Instagram, and there's so much cool stuff on there. Like Richard has done a tremendous job already with what we have ready to go right now, and there'll just be more goodness to come as well. So honestly, I'm just wowed with how that's all come about, and we've got like, oh man, the actual logo itself was really cool, kind of like a little Shop of Horrors ode while with the Audrey eating a VHS tape. So sick. And I just It's a pleasure to be part of it, you know. It's Richard is just I honestly do look at all of these pieces that we've done together like collaboration projects. Like, there's some people you come across and you just have so much taste and everything like that that just line up so well. So every one of these things that Bridget's got me to do, it's honestly been such a privilege and an honor as well. So please, I'd love for you to check out that that logo, but the whole brand as well. Just jump through. Richard's also put together like these tiles of the on the page where you go past the first bit of the tile, and there's an amazing little kind of video kind of stuff for you to check out too. One of which was it really took me because I'm a big time Quentin Tarantino fan, and this is sort of like going back in time before Quentin Tarantino became an amazing director. He was working in this wonderful place called the Video Archives, which was this beautifully nostalgic VHS store from back in the day. And you know, just all of the celebration of the nerddom of a passion for cinema, and all like the weird little bits of trivia and things like that. It's sort of like a tour through that. But it got me thinking, because one of the things that Tarantino says in this video piece that Richard put up there was he mentioned about the. Like the thing of being a real cinephile, like of being a massive, you know, nerd for cinema, is like, what do you have to show for it? You know, you've got maybe some posters, maybe some stills of these movies that you've got, you know, printed out and on your wall, in terms of physical kind of things. But the big thing that you get out of it, that he said was. You get like a tastes, you get like a outlook and obviously a knowledge of this thing that you've been really passionate about for so long, that it gives you, you know, a really, you know, unique educated opinion on all this kind of stuff. And when I was listening to this, it rang true for me in one sense, because I love movies. You know, I'm a bit of a movie nerd, especially culty, schlocky kind of stuff, and film history and everything like that. But, you know, I'm never one of these, you know, movie a day kind of guys, as much as I'd like to be, maybe one day. But it got me thinking of, like, the wrestling nerddom side of it. You know, it's quite similar. Like, I've watched a lot of wrestling. You know, if I counted up the amount of hours of wrestling I've watched over the years, it's it would be a bloody lot. So, and I'm like, what do I have? But what I have to show for it? You know, I do have some amazing friends to show for it. A lot of ridiculous wrestling nerd collection kind of stuff. But yeah, I think an interesting, weird. Educated kind of opinion on stuff, and you know, as Quentin Tarantino was saying in this thing, it's like it's not. I would never tell anyone that my opinion is more important than theirs, or say that anyone else is wrong, or you know that kind of stuff. Because it's all just tastes, really, like any art. But I think at the end of the day, you know what you have watched shapes what you like and what you've been exposed to and what you kind of dig, and I think, you know, and like, I guess my opinion, you know, it's stuff that I feel is the right opinion, at least as far as, you know, my thoughts are concerned. So, I don't know, that's why I like talking about wrestling. That's why I like talking to people about wrestling, having a dialogue about it. It's kind of the magic of everyone having a little bit of a different taste about stuff. And sometimes, even I think I've even said it before, even in, like, you know, the world of Twitter and that, there can be so much negativity and stuff like that. But I think if we can approach it in like, a sort of nice, you know, kind of polite manner. There can be a really interesting discourse. There's nothing more boring than everyone just thinking the same thing. So, you know, I think there's just something to be said there. But, yeah, so we had that. Also had the launch of, or soon to be official launch for the new first episode, the Sandman podcast. So Sandman of ECW fame starting a podcast, finally getting on the podcast train, and they approached me, little old me, to do the artwork for it, which I was so, so bloody excited about the prospect of. You know, I was a massive ECW fan from back in the day, all that ECW nostalgia and amazingness. And same for Sandman, you know, that like 94, 95, like that early kind of period, 96, nothing like Sandman's amazing, reckless, like wild, oh man. Can't say enough good things about it. So I was delighted by that. Please check that out. I've posted that just on the Instagram today. Yeah, quite proud of that artwork. And I hope I captured the Sandman vibe, you know, a bit. There's Zubaz and Singapore Cane and Budweiser. Man, fun stuff. And then, of course, I also had that artist market that I was telling you about last week. So that was an absolutely delightful experience yet again. Got to have some wonderful chats with different people, some really interesting chats, sell some stuff, see some regular faces. It just made me so happy. And the best part, though, was someone... So I had like all the shirts there, the White Castle shirts, and then I get people that come along and they might not know anything about wrestling. I had this one lady that came along and she was looking at the White Castle shirt and she was like, I don't get it, but I really like it. And I don't think I could do a better quote to sum up, you know, my art for people, because I obviously do a lot of it, you know, for people, like-minded wrestling maniacs like myself. But it hits different when you got someone who has no idea about wrestling, where they're just like, I don't know what this is, but I dig it. And, you know, it might have been her, might have been someone else. They were like, man, I didn't even really know what wrestling is, but I kind of really like this stuff, so maybe I should get into wrestling. And I'm like, man, what a bloody compliment. For my art, that is. That just made me so happy. But yeah, wonderful experience. And it was kind of interesting too, because a lot of the people there, it was a bit more of like a mainstream art kind of audience. I wasn't quite sure how they'd take my stuff, but for the most part, all really, really lovely. So hopefully many more in-person Chris Things art events in the future. I just have such a great time with that stuff. But all right, that's enough of what's been going on in the world of Chris Things. Let's throw over to our special doubleheader match of the week. Ladies and gents, we are back for our latest of our double headers of our match of the week. Yes, we had our artist interview last week, so we've got two match of the weeks to talk about, and I am delighted that the gentleman that we have to talk about these is my dear friend Bradley. Welcome to the show, Brad.
Thank you, Chris. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I was just mentioning to you how much of a brain-numbing situation sometimes this technical difficulties can be. But I finally got through it, so I'm honestly very pleased with myself. How about you?
Yeah, not bad. I've just been watching videos on how to tape up my knee while I was waiting, so I'm all good.
Oh my gosh, please fill in our listeners on your knee situation.
I heard it a couple of weeks ago because I spent the weekend going to a stunt course. So I was doing like fight choreography and wire work and airbag stuff, and all that was super fun. But before I did any of that, just taking a sort of a flip bump onto a mat, I twisted my knee up real bad. So.
And this coming from someone that previously used to wrestle professionally, and I mean, as far as I'm aware, you never really had any serious injuries from that, did you?
No, I never really got hurt. Like, no, not properly hurt wrestling at all. I think it was because this bump was like, it was a trampoline onto a mat, and I blame the trampoline. Like, it's those wrestling rings are solid, mostly, sort of. And so the trampoline is too springy for me. I couldn't control my body in the air properly.
So too much spring.
Yeah, that's it. That's why Mystico would blow his spots.
It's like you were wrestling Mark Henry back in the day, and he just gave you a real big old thing, and you just can't control your momentum.
Yeah, that's it. But that's right. Now I had time to watch the video, so now I'm going to tape it off, and it's going to be all good, and I can play volleyball on it.
That sounds delightful. Has it impacted your, I assume it would have, your gym? Because you're pretty hectic, serious into your gym life.
Yeah, I'd eased off for the first week, and then the second week I was just like, what exercises can I do where I don't need to brace on that leg at all? And so I worked around it.
Smart man. That's good.
But Chris.
Yes.
I'm excited to be here, to join you once again for your Bryan Danielson Match of the Week series.
Yes, but this one, it's not all Bryan Danielson, though.
What?
Maybe.
I thought that's all this was now.
Basically. I mean, honestly, next week's probably will be. I haven't actually seen the Shibata match yet, but I'll definitely be giving it a watch. And knowing what that's probably going to be like, I think it's a pretty safe bet. But no, this week we've broken it up when we have bloody Vader versus Kobashi.
I'm sort of pretty excited to talk about that. They're not guys I've watched that much of, but I know that's the second one, so we'll get to that one. But I am pretty psyched for it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the magic of this doubleheader ones that we do every now and then is that you get two matches that sort of. Either there's like a big contrast, or there's always some interesting thing about how they sort of like go head to head with one another. And this one's pretty interesting. I mean, we got one match from like 1999, one match from earlier this year. But at the same time, I think they're both. What I think I love about both of them, before we go on to talk about them separately, is they're both kind of like a bit. Rough around the edges, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they've both got that real sort of sense of, like, struggle about them and not too much, like, cleanness. I mean, that's something I've come to really, like, hate about a lot of wrestling these days, like, with how much everything's, like, the striving for everything to be, like, crisp and clean and perfect. Like, I sometimes just want my wrestling to be a bit messy, you know?
I don't mind the cleanness, but I can still appreciate this where you see the struggle there and you're like, yeah, no, it really feels like they're fighting for it. I don't need all my matches to be that, but when they are that, I'm not upset.
Yeah. What else were your thoughts of the sort of like two compared with one another before we get into them individually?
Like, I think we'll get sort of, I guess, yeah, more details when we're in match by match, but like, it's sort of a bit surprising, like comparing Danielson and Eddie, where you're like, oh, Eddie's the guy who's like, he wears his Japanese influences on his sleeve type thing. But then like watching that, watching the old Japan match and like seeing how much it is like you keep bashing a guy, you keep striking a guy, you keep with the hits until you can try and lock in a submission. It's like how much that is just Danielson all the time. And you're like, oh, that's... And again, that sort of goes into that sloppiness where it's not just, oh, I'm going to lock in my thing. It's I'm going to keep hitting you, keep kicking, keep whatever it is until you can sort of wrap your arms around him or legs around him in the way where you're going to lock in the submission.
Yeah.
Which was, yeah. So, yeah, I think this is a pair of matches, more similarities than differences.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's not quite the... current day Joshi wrestling versus 1984 world class that we had a little while back in terms of contrast, but it's still quite interesting. I mean, so yeah, let's jump into it. So I had two matches here, as mentioned earlier, we've got Eddie Kingston against Bryan Danielson from earlier not too long ago, maybe a month ago or so, the big Revolution pay-per-view at the Greensboro Coliseum, the big Sting retirement show. And also, I guess this was potentially the blow-off to this epic feud that we've seen between Bryan Danielson and a man that's come to be known as the King of the Bums, Eddie Kingston. And so that is like a key part of it to me. Like, I think if you're watching it standalone, this match, like we actually watched this match together when we were watching the pay-per-view. And I think it wasn't really until I really rewatched this match and thought about it a bit more and thought about like the whole feud and everything that led up to this. And then how every bit of this match kind of like, I don't know, worked within the context of that feud. That's where this becomes all the more satisfying for me. I mean, especially like from that, they had their match in the whatever that tournament thing was called, the Continental Classic, that was
yeah.
It. Where Danielson gets the big win, and there's that dude in the crowd with like the Eddie Kingston is a bum sign, and Danielson just like grabs it and he like leaves it on top of Eddie in the finish, and just so great. And Eddie just looks like his heart has just been crushed, like Ralph Wiggum when Lisa breaks his heart.
You can see it right here.
Valentine's Day, yeah. And then like, all the way around, and then Eddie eventually kind of like embraces the bums thing. And I don't know, one of the things I really loved about this whole feud and this match was that as like much hatred as there was going on between them, and all this like, you know, yeah, Danielson wrestling Eddie Kingston's heroes, you know, like Akiyama.
Yeah.
You know, Danielson like giving Eddie the finger or not even acknowledging him, all this like disrespect kind of thing. At the end of the day, it all just came down to like Eddie winning Danielson's respect by being the better wrestler. And that's all it was. And I just thought that was like quite beautiful. And that was like really, I thought, the story that was told throughout this match.
Yeah, well, because on the night, this wasn't your match of the night sort of immediately after the show. Because I think it was you like the BCC FDR match best. Mm. But yeah, I guess, yeah, with the more context of the story, which I don't really have that context as much because I don't watch the weekly show. So I watched the hype video for it and then rewatched this match again. And so I'm looking at it more from just like from this match in a bubble type thing. But still, great match. Like even without all the context, just sort of the ideas and what commentary is offering and the little bit I saw in the hype video before it.
Yeah. I think that's really interesting as well when you can sort of like look at a match with both eyes like that, like how it sort of stands up when you are, you know, looking at all of the backstory and everything, and then just like, you know, watching a bit more fresh, I guess. But yeah, I think there was actually a bit of controversy after this match with like, you know, those kind of like bad faith assholes on Twitter, like posting excerpts. There was a bit during Eddie's comeback. So a big, you know, key part of the match is obviously Danielson targeting and working over Eddie's like hand and arm.
Yeah.
So Eddie's like kind of like a one-armed man through a lot of this. And then he like comes back with those kind of like chops and everything. So someone that like, you know, clipped a little excerpt of that with like Eddie just like fighting for what he's got kind of thing, real limited. And obviously these strikes aren't like the most effective strikes because he's like hitting him with his arm that's like hanging on by a string. Now was making it out like, oh, this is meant to be a great match. This is that Eddie Kingston guy that you say is so great. And making out that it's like sucks and is real sloppy and shit because of that. But it's so weird because when you watch the match, that was probably like my favorite part of the match, and people are saying it's like the worst. It's weird.
Are they those strikes near the end for like his when he's going with the left hand because he can't use the right anymore because Danielson just destroyed his right hand and arm?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, it's his weak arm, but yet, like that, we're getting to the end of the match, but like that, it's his weak arm, so they're not going to be his best strike. So it doesn't matter that they're not perfect. And he kept throwing them, which was sort of the point of it. It's like, even though like he couldn't use one arm, he started throwing with the other arm. And that sort of went into a bit of like the Danielson hubris, where he decided to like trade with the hands, which like from the start of the match, where you're like, oh, Danielson can't keep up with Eddie's hands, like in terms of power. And so at the end of the match, he's like, oh, no, I've destroyed his right arm. He can't shot me. He's not going to be able to weigh me down. And so we just went with the other arm. And no, that was great. Like,
yeah,
that's the story of the match. Like, I'm not on Twitter, so I don't get to see the bad faith stuff. I'm just like, I'm just going to watch the match. And I'm like, yeah, they told the story. I don't understand.
I think that's the way to be. Stay off the Twitter. Stay away from these bad faith assholes. But. Man, I really loved like the way that they even got into him working over the arm initially, with him sort of like luring him in his crafty Danielson kind of ways.
Yeah, like I liked, like even before he started working the arm, he was working the leg, because you know you go into the match with the strategy, so he was working on his leg. But then yeah, he lured him while they were on the ring apron, wasn't it? He lured Eddie back, so Danielson kept backing up, and so then Eddie was chopping him until he chops the post. And then as soon as Danielson sees that, he's like, oh, I'm on that hand, I'm on that arm, this is perfect. And so like I like that as a story of the match, where like he wasn't working the hand from the start, but he was working something, because he's a technical wrestler who's going to try and wear Eddie down. And but then yeah, he sees that opening, he's just like, he's just on it then for the rest of the match.
Yeah, and I just love Eddie's, like, I don't know, the combination of his, it's like his selling, but his, like, selling still being, like, come on, you motherfucker, get this arm, you know, kind of thing, like, just that, like, total Eddie Kingston kind of, like, I don't know, little fucking rugged, like, You can beat him down, but he'll never stop coming back kind of thing. Like,
yeah.
There are a bunch of moments throughout it to where he had, like, just little things, little, like, facial expressions or little, like, things where he's, like, kind of, like, holding his arm and still, like, looking at him and, like, come on, go.
Yeah.
And, oh, man, like, that bit that I actually, like, picked for the illustration, that was another one. There was a few like really good ones I was thinking about as always, but like just that bit where Danielson is just ranking, like wrenching away at that hand, and Eddie is like got that like classic kind of demeanor, that like look on his face of just that perseverance and just like, you know, fuck you, I'm gonna get through this kind of thing. And then he's like finally gets onto the ropes, like, I don't know, I think that to me is the whole thing of this match, of maybe Danielson being the better, more dominant wrestler of the two, but Eddie has more heart perhaps.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, that's a big part of it. But I was just like, most of my notes are like about all the stuff I love about Danielson. Like Eddie, yes, I like Eddie. Eddie's good. Eddie, and like his heart, the story of his heart in the match is awesome. But I'm just like, all the little things Danielson does, I'm just like, oh man, this dude is like, obviously he's good. Everyone knows Danielson's good, but man, is he good.
Oh, I think Danielson really gets to show off his strengths when he's against like an opponent that's like as like the complete opposite of him, as what like a guy like Eddie Kingston is. Like, I mean, I think back to like some of my favorite matches from Danielson back in the day, and like Ring of Honor, for example. And like, I think some of my favorite matches are like, do you ever remember seeing like Danielson just like stretching the hell out of Jack Evans?
Yeah, yeah.
Like that kind of thing, just the complete opposite of Ryan Danielson, but just like so good.
I mean, you say that though, but then like whatever, a couple of weeks ago your match of the week was Danielson Zach, so like you put him against anyone and he's having awesome matches. Like, as long as they can step up with him, like it does, and it's not always the same sort of match. Sometimes it is that match where he like clearly out wrestles them, but they've got the heart or they've got the whatever else to keep in the fight. Or then there is the Zach matches where it's just like, no, we're going to go hold for hold technical wrestling. And then sometimes it's those sort of guys together, but then it devolves into, it's not going to be technical wrestling anymore because we've pissed each other off. So now we're just hitting, we're beating the shit out of each other. And like he can do all of those, and in all of them, he's just so good.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, you bring up a very good point there, because I'm like, man, I think about that Zack Sabre Jr. match, and I think that's still maybe my my favorite match of this whole year. And at the end of the day, it is just a testament to like how bloody good Bryan Danielson is, and how much he's not just sort of like a formula, like this is the Bryan Danielson match that everyone has. Like there's so much variety, and I don't know if that's like maybe been a big part as well for him for this kind of like swan song run of his last like year as a full-time professional wrestler, whether that's him like, you know, wanting to do all sorts of different stuff and all that variety. But man, I'm gonna be so sad when it's over. Hey,
yeah. But, and what's also good about it is that he's got that variety of match structures, but it's not like he's changing his whole moveset every time. It's like, it's still, you're watching it and you go, oh, this is Danielson wrestling. Like he's doing Danielson's moves, but they're mixed up in different ways for the match. And like they're made appropriate for the match. Like in this one, like I'm looking at your art right now, he essentially got Eddie into the little bell lock, but then immediately wrenched over that arm and started working the hand because he'd been working the hand all match.
Yep.
And so like he's just putting variations on his stuff to still work within the match he's doing. And then later on he had Eddie in a triangle, but he pulled the hand down and he's still working the hand while he's got him in a triangle, because like the triangle is the Danielson move, but no, you got to work the hand as well because that's what you're doing in this match. And so he sort of adapts his moveset to the match as well, which is awesome.
Yeah. I think like there's some wrestlers where the more you really like look with a lot of you know, detail like what they're doing and what, you know, these subtleties of like changing these things up in little ways, that just, yeah, it's just so much to appreciate and so much to admire. Danielson, Bryan Danielson, everybody, is very good.
he's a good wrestler. He's been a good wrestler for 25 years, however long it's been. It's like, there you go. Have you guys heard of this kid?
Apparently, I heard something earlier this week where Danielson was saying to someone like, it you know, he wasn't being called the best wrestler in the world, you know, for a long time. And he said to someone, I think it might have been a press interview or whatever, and he said, you know, in 2004, no one was calling me the best in the world. And it's like, yes, they were. There were various people, like the Death Valley Driver.
Yeah, best technical wrestler, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Like, he's been like, so good for so long.
But, like, just he's just done so much. Like, I was sort of wondering, like, is he the greatest of all time, or at least that's hard. Is he the greatest of this century?
He's got to be, right? I'd say for sure in terms of like contemporary wrestlers who's you know, who we got to see them and watch a lot of their matches closely in their prime, and we like lived through that. I'd say for sure. Like, I'm never for, like, sort of the hyperbole of, you know, everyone makes out, like, everything they're seeing is, like, the greatest ever. Because it's like, you know, I'm like, all right, how many house shows did you go to see, you know, Ric Flair and Ricky the Dragon Steamboat on that, like, loop in the Carolinas? Or, like, how many Vern Gagne, Nick Bockwinkle matches did you see in Minnesota that were never filmed? You know, that kind of stuff?
Yeah.
But I think all we can do is really just be like, all right, for what I've got the opportunity to watch closely, like during our kind of time, like this was bloody as good as it gets. And I would definitely say that for Bryan Danielson.
Yeah. He's just been doing it for so long and at so many different places. Like he main evented Mania 10 years ago and now he's on this run of a, run of a lifetime now, having like these dream matches. But like, yeah, and 20 years ago, everyone like was calling him the best technical wrestler. So just for so long, he's been doing so good in so many different ways. It's not like he's just been the best technical wrestler for 20 years. It's like, no, he was also the most over person in wrestling at one point. And he was also, you know, this and that. It's like, it's a pretty good case for just, yeah, you don't need to say he's the best, because, yeah, you don't know everyone who's everything, but just he's done so much at such a high level.
Oh, for sure. And like talking about things like his like brawling kind of stuff is like super underrated too. His promos are like some of the best, like most effective like promos that I've seen of anyone doing shit currently. Like there's few guys where I see them do a promo and actually like believe in an authentic way in what they're saying, that they actually kind of mean it and they're not just like reciting a script or whatever. Yeah. And Danielson is one of those guys for me, for sure.
And just not particularly part of like the best of all time or whatever conversation, but just his character work as well. Like after the bell of this match, so Eddie's won the match after, in fairness, not a great clothesline and powerbomb, but that was just two moves, whatever. Two moves don't ruin a match. But then Danielson's like,
and hey, it was the struggle. This is a dude doing it who's like, arm's fucked, so it might not be the most perfect one ever, but I buy it.
Yeah, I buy them not being the tidiest moves. I don't buy them then winning the match. But that doesn't matter. It's two moves out of a really good match. But like with Danielson having to shake Eddie's hand, and he's just got that character work there where he's like, puts his hand out. And he's like, no, I'm not going to do it. Puts his hand out. Just like, because he's a dickhead. Like he has, like that's his character. He's not, he's a dick and a bully. And he has been for a long time. But he's still got honor. So he does end up shaking his hand. And it's like, and that's also part of his character since the start. It's like, yeah, no, if he respects you, he doesn't need to like you, but if he respects you, he will do the right thing. And so he did the right thing. It's like, but with that character, he doesn't just shake the hand or he doesn't just say no. He makes it, it's clearly a Danielson thing.
I love that, like, even in defeat, he can still be, like, a goading asshole.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was such a cool moment at the end.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Just after that was Eddie's, Danielson went to raise his hand and then Eddie gets him to raise the other hand. Because the hand Danielson was raising was the one that was ruined. And it was like, oh, that's also a bit of great character or a bit of great selling from Eddie, where he's just like, no, you can't lift that arm. You've wrecked it.
And then also, if you look at it even closer, I'm like, if I think about it, with like Danielson, his whole thing, did he like purposely like lift the arm that he knew that he'd just worked, kind of thing, you know?
Probably. You could easily take it that way and it would absolutely fit in.
Yeah. But yeah, this is all the things that upon looking back at like a bloody awesome pay-per-view that this was, that like I cannot remember the last pay-per-view, and especially like big time like American pay-per-view that I've seen that's had like this many high-end great matches on it. And yeah, like you said, I initially didn't even have this as my top one, but it's one of those slow burner ones where you really think about it, and that's what officially won it over for me. And I don't know, I'd be interested to see if other people upon, you know, rewatching this match get a bit more out of it later on too.
Yeah, well, it wasn't my match of the night. It was like probably my third match of the night, but I still love this match. So like that does go to show how high the match quality was on that show for it to be number three and this good. It was like, how good were the other matches above it? And like, I'm disqualifying matches for people I'm just not into that other people really love. So like this could easily be like someone's fifth best match of the night. It's still an awesome match, but there was just, so much good stuff on the show.
Yeah. crazy good show. I cannot recommend that pay-per-view enough. I'm very happy that we ended up watching that together. But then we moved on. Then we go on to again we travel back in time to 1999, 25 years ago, and a match that I so I've been on a bit of a Vader kick lately, you know, to be honest. I'll make no bones about it. I love Vader. I just am like, he is everything that I love about professional wrestling. Just about like the realism of it. You know, he's the kind of guy where like there's some wrestling that you watch that you're sort of like embarrassed for other people to dip, like, oh, this is the stuff you watch kind of thing. But Vader's the kind of dude I'm like, no, this is an example of what, you know, to me, great pro wrestling is. And so I've been watching like really closely, like the other week, you know, a lot of those Vader Sting matches.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about continuing on my kind of rewatch of that series and making up to their next match. But then I just had something where I was like, man, change it up. Let's go to a different era of Vader. Just in, you know, I was looking up stuff on Cage Match, which I feel is a absolutely wonderful resource for all of us wrestling nerds. And, you know, I was like, I wonder, I couldn't remember off the top of my head what Vader's, you know, first match back or in Japan, or, you know, first one for All Japan was after that WWF run. And then I looked into it and it was like the big, the World Tag League was his first kind of big return. And he had a bunch of awesome matches against, well, opposite Kobashi. I think it was like Kobashi teaming with Akiyama against Vader and Stan Hansen, which were just incredible matches. But then I kept going through and I'm like, oh, his first actual singles match is a singles against Kobashi. And I was just so intrigued by that match too. So I was like, all right, this is the one. I'm just going to jump right in and check this out. And, man, it's just so much interesting stuff. So this is in Yokohama. It's the New Year Giant Series show, the main event of the show. So after the tag league is finished the previous year, Vader's got some unfinished business, and then this is a big, big-time marquee match. Vader's first singles match back in Japan after all these years against Kenta Kobashi. And, you know, like Kobashi as well, easily one of my all-time favorite wrestlers. You know, when I got into watching Noah, like, properly, that was when Kobashi was, like, still around. Like, definitely later stage Kobashi, but still amazing Kobashi.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I was just like, what even, I was quite intrigued, like, what even this match kind of would look and feel like. And, man, I watched it, and I think the biggest thing that I was happy about was, like, you'd hear about how great it was for Vader as well, of him sort of, like, finding himself again after that terrible WWF run. But watching this match, I was just like, man, this delivered on every one of those things. And as a Vader fan, I was just like so happy watching it, dude.
Well, for my background going into this match, it's like I haven't really seen that much Vader or really that much Kobashi. I've seen more Kobashi than Vader, but it's just Vader was before my time, and I didn't go back and watch his stuff. I was aware of him, but it was just, I hadn't watched a lot of Vader, so I sort of went into this going, this is your match of the week, so I'm gonna go in sort of amped for it. And I really like Kobashi, so I'm like, oh, I'm keen to see Vader up against someone I really like anyway. And yeah, man, Vader's pretty rad. I'm coming in with these hot takes, these big revelations. Danielson, good wrestler. Vader, pretty friggin' rad.
How about that?
listen, if people want some up-to-date, brand-new wrestling opinions, I'm here for it. But, yeah, I mean, I just hadn't seen much of him before. And he was, yeah, it was very, yeah, I liked it a lot.
This is quite interesting, like, when you say that, of, like, coming out of someone who hasn't watched a lot of Vader, because there's a lot of sort of Vader, I guess some Vader norms in this match that are kind of turned on their head. I guess going into this, you know, Kobashi is the massive crowd favorite. You know, he's been massively over forever at this point. You know, one of the four pillars of heaven. He's I think this is after his first Triple Crown win a couple of years prior. I imagine he's, because he had a fucked up eyebrow thing where he had his head all bandaged up in this match. I assume that was something that happened in the aforementioned tag league. But the super interesting thing, again, looking at it as someone who's like, you might not have seen that much Vader. Vader normally is, you know, bull out of the gates, you know, rushes his opponent into the corner, those big time, like, Vader clubs to the all around in the corner, just like rushing the opponent. This match was kind of turned on its head because, like, Kobashi did that, you know? I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
And then when Kobashi gets him into the corner, it just starts slapping away, and it's like slapping his mask off.
the bit before that, so they've locked up, Kobashi sort of got him back to the ropes, and then they've done the breakaway, seeing if anyone's going to like hit the other one and or have a clean break, and they get broken up, and Vader just looks so disappointed in Kobashi, like that Kobashi might have like thought that he was going to cheat or like take the cheap shot there. Like Vader's like, what? I don't need to do that. But then, yeah, Kobashi's like just, yeah, with the hard strikes in the corner, the hard chops, like just chopping him down, just like, fucking take me seriously. It's like, okay. And then, yeah, not, it takes his mask off or sort of chops him down so Vader has to pull the mask off because it was half off anyway. And my note here is it like Naito's shirt or Tai Chi's pants? Is that the sign that we got to take him seriously now? It's like, is mask off like the Tai Chi pants off?
I think that, actually, thinking back to all of my favorite Vader matches, it definitely is a sign of things getting to the next level when the mask comes off. Like, I think of that gnarly one that you had with Stan Hansen or some of those Sting matches where he's just like, all right, mask off, motherfucker. I think there's definitely something to be said for that. But I definitely want to, before we get too far into the match, I want to put over the entrances. I mean, I loved seeing Vader come out to, like, Rainbow, like Ronnie James Dio, like Eyes of the World, just such a great song. But also the way, like, there's something so timeless about these classic 90s All Japan matches where they start out, you know, filming the dude just, like, waiting to go out to the crowd kind of thing. And he's, like, just standing in the hallway. And then he's like, all right, shit, time to go. Grabs the chair, you know.
Another similarity to Danielson Kingston.
yes.
Because that was how they started. They were in the backstage area. And I'm like, oh, that was neat. But, yeah, same here.
Yeah, where it was too serious a moment for the interviewers to actually get to chat to the athletes, but we got pre-recorded comments.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting. But no, for this one, I love that he, like, grabs a chair, almost like I was envisioning kind of like, you know, you would have seen, like, those kind of, like, Bruiser Brody, Stan Hansen kind of coming through the crowd, and they're, like, whipping the crowd with the chain or the bull rope, like, just this crazy kind of thing. It's almost like Vader grabbed this chair to kind of, you know, fight off the fans. But then he kind of comes out, and then he works out. They just really like him. And then he ends up having, like, the chair that he's swirling around, and he just starts kind of, like, waving to the fans. Then they wave back, and I just thought that was a beautiful little moment.
I got Vader grabbing the chair on the way out because he doesn't look like enough of a threat. This giant man comes out and, like, oh, but he's got a chair. It's like, no, he was going to kill you anyway if he wanted to.
There's something just about that little wave, though. It's like, I don't know whether he was intending to wave, and then the fans kind of took it as a wave and then waved back. It's just, I don't know. just kind of lovely, very very adorable. But man, once the match kind of gets going and Kobashi really takes kind of the like sets the offensive precedent, from like where you're saying after those slaps and everything, the crowd's like really getting into it. And then the bit where like Vader comes back and of all things that like short like jab to his like eyebrow that's clearly all roughed off. Loved it. This perfect consummate bad guy, you know?
And just getting that heat from the crowd as well. Like, oh, we sort of liked you, but boo. You're not allowed to do that.
Yeah.
It's clearly bandaged up, you heel.
Yeah, like, I mean, the crowd clearly wants to really love Vader, and I think he does a great job of keeping them kind of on their toes, and like, there's never a point where they stop loving Kobashi to a ridiculous degree, so that kind of sympathy stuff works really, really well. But then that they get to the outside, and this was the first moment of the match that really got me like, oh. Okay, then, this is at the next level. That bloody powerbomb on the outside.
Yeah, that powerbomb where he just, like, he was all the way up. It wasn't one of those lazy powerbombs where you sort of get him most of the way up and sort of just drop him from halfway. It's like, no, he picked him all the way up and threw him down. Just like, that's the outside, man. That gotta hurt.
Man, that splat sound afterwards, like... And even like that, like you were talking before about those little bits of dudes having to work to pull something off. Like when he went to give Kobashi that powerbomb to start with, he like fought him off. It was kind of like almost like the old Nintendo 64 wrestling games, where it's like you go for it straight away. You got to like, you know, build up to that shit. And then it takes him a little bit, fights him off, but no, he's going to get this powerbomb, reaps him up there. And this was one of the moments where I like definitely took a bunch of screen grabs, because like that's actually pretty great visual. The way like Kobashi's arms were just flailing, you know, when he's at the apex of this powerbomb, and then just Vader powers him down, man, brutal. And then on top of that, he goes and gets his great friend that chair again.
Yeah, that's my note. Vader's got the chair again.
And he initially tries to grab one and it's like a whole row of chairs. I was kind of expecting him to just like hit him with this whole row of them, but man, that was a nasty chair shot.
I've also got it going on the other screen. I just saw him pick up the row of chairs. I'm like, yep. he could have picked up just hit him with all those chairs. But then he gets him back in the ring with the like he does a splash in the clothesline, and Kobashi's a big dude as well, not Vader big, but he's a big solid dude, but taking these massive bumps off the clothesline, so like makes Vader look even meaner because Kobashi's just getting sort of thrown around.
Oh man, all of the clothesline, lariat, whatever you want to call it, spots in this match were so great because they all just had such like a vicious thud to them. You know, it's like, you're right in saying like Kobashi is a bloody big dude. Like he is one of the hugest barrel bodied like dudes that you will ever see. And Vader is just demolishing him. And then when he comes back on with some of his lines on Vader too, just so sick. But I think a big thing that I noticed through this was like I almost forgot, because it's been a hot minute since I've watched some Kobashi matches, I almost forgot how much I loved his sweet spinning judo chop kind of thing, like that back spinning one after his like repeated front chops.
Most of his strikes are so good. His kicks are not the biggest fan of, but like, yeah, all of his hand strikes, he's just, yeah, they look nasty and they sound nasty as well. Like you hear that slappy thud all the time. But then like even the other stuff he does, he does his plancha to the outside. And like this goes into Kobashi being a big man as well. I'm just like, he looks like It's probably to do because he's got the orange pants on and he's got the dark tan, but he just looks like a brick wall of a man. And so when he plunges, I'm just like, who wants to catch that brick wall just being thrown over the top rope at them? He's just such a solid dude. And so, yeah, it all just looks real nasty when he just like got that body weight hitting into Vader.
Yeah, there's like so much of this match is just, that was funny. I read something about it where someone said they thought it was a kind of like a bit of a fresh like departure from like your sort of classic 90s All Japan, like King's Road kind of style matches.
Yeah.
So I guess, you know, Vader's bringing a bit more of like an American wrestling kind of vibe to it, maybe. But I don't know, when I was watching it, this was just so classic All Japan style in that way of like, you know, they were going for stuff early on that wasn't, you know, quite working. But, like, the overall, like, build and escalation of the match and, like, the way that it hits that kind of, like, crescendo, like, I thought it was, like, exactly so much of what I love about those kind of, like, epic All Japan matches in that way. And so much about it was, like, the selling of the stuff and the exact points when the momentum went back and forth. Like, yeah. A lot of the stuff you get so used to, you know, especially watching a lot of like American wrestling kind of thing where it's like, all right, this is the, you know, opening sequence. This is the shine. This is the heat. This is the comeback. This is the, what, you know, everything's very much like in this rigid kind of formula. Whereas this, like, it just kind of went back and forth in a lot more of an organic way. But, man, that bit when Vader just started hitting those splashes, man. Like, I don't think anyone has a better splash than Vader.
That whole run near the end where it's moonsaults and splashes, I'm just like, these guys are so, it looks so good, these big dudes just hitting it. Just like, it's, they're not the cleanest moves always, but. Like, you look at them and you go, they don't need to be clean, because if that hits you, like, you're wrecked.
It just looks like it really hurts.
Yeah.
Like, there's even one, like, before we get to, like, the, you know, proper finishing stretch of, like, the big, you know, Vader splashes in the corner or the super splash. Like, just one where I think he gets him, they get back in the ring and Vader does his, like, just run up classic, like, just running splash on the mat.
And yeah, yeah.
Kobashi just, like, he just hits him with so much momentum and force. Like, you think a move like just a running body splash, you're like, oh, yeah, that's just a hokey, old-timey kind of spot. You watch this and I'm like, that was, like, one of the coolest things I've ever seen. And then Kobashi's, like, selling to it of just looking like he's been hit by a truck. Blood is just, like, trickling out of his mouth. Glassy-eyed. Just so perfect.
Yeah. Really good. Another spot I just wanted to call out, I think it might have been a bit before this, is they got back into the ring and Kobashi's trying to get Vader up for the vertical suplex and he can't do it because Vader's sort of, like, too heavy for him. And so this is sort of opposite from before when Vader did the powerbomb. It's like, oh, it's not working. I'm going to bash you some more so I can hit it. Kobashi's like, can't hit the vertical, just sort of calls for the crowd to cheer for him, and they do. And so then with the power of the crowd, he's able to hit the vertical suplex on Vader. I'm just like, oh, he's got it. He's got like that energy from the people. I really enjoyed that.
So good. There was so much about it where I'm just, like, I'm just watching it and the charisma of Kobashi and that, like, yeah, connection with the crowd. That's just one of those timeless things. And that's one of the things where there's certain bits of watching this kind of like classic period of, like, to me, I think 90s All Japan is like my favorite era of wrestling ever, just in terms of quality and, you know, amazing matches. But at the end of the day, it's like that connection that they had with the crowd and like the drama from that side of it. And this had that so much. Like, there were so many bits for, like, when Kobashi would kick out of something massive, you know? Like, when Vader hit that bloody amazing out-of-control Vader salt. And, you know, that had been protected so well up to that point. That was like his super finisher kind of thing. And when Kobashi like kicks out of it, like the fucking roar of that crowd, like the stomping, the whole like, man, it's just like some wrestling sometimes doesn't feel like it's the same world anymore as that kind of level, you know?
I love the part, like the build in the match to that, to the Vader salt where Kobashi's Mr. Moonsault then like countered like thrown Vader off the top rope pretty much and then hit the moonsault and like that, oh, like, oh, Kobashi's got him with the moonsault. And then yeah, for Vader to hit his own after that, you're just like, oh my god, fucking Vader's hitting moonsaults too. Everyone's, these massive men are just flipping onto each other.
And even seeing someone kick out of like Kobashi's moonsault, like he went on to, that was like the, you know, proper super finish of Kobashi too. So, you know, I'm not sure exactly how he kind of had that figured at this point, but like the shock on that and the fact that he was even so shocked that he just like went straight for the pinfall again like afterwards, I thought was super cool. But man, at the big one for me there, I was just like, holy shit, was that that German suplex.
Yeah. Like, so that was like, that was straight after Vader's moonsault.
And Vader runs and he like crushes him in the corner with that backsplash, and then just straight into possibly the biggest German suplex I've ever seen.
I was trying to work out why it looks so big, because we've seen plenty of big German suplexes. I'm like, it did. It looks massive and it was awesome. But it's like, I think probably Vader couldn't really bridge. So like he's half Germaning him, half throwing him, but he's not just like tossing him over his head. Like he's still going back for it. So that's why plus Vader's huge. So he's got him so high up in the air, and Kobashi is awesome as well. So he's not sort of, he's keeping his body up nice and high. And so they just go over so high. So that way, that means when it hits the mat, it's just this, yeah, it was an amazing German suplex.
Yeah, Vader just like powered him like up with so much like explosive force, like, because Vader is just a definition of a big strong boy.
Yeah,
and like he just like got him up, and again we're talking about like Kobashi is a massive dude. Like I don't know exactly. I'm assuming he weighed at least probably like 110 kilos or something at this point. Yeah. And like Kobashi just flies up into the air, comes down straight on his head. It was one of the most awesome things I've ever seen.
Yeah, and then from there it goes into the Vader bomb, another splash. And it's like he just keeps splashing him until he's dead. It's just like, stop throwing all your body weight on this man, but he just won't.
And I thought they did such a good job as well of like, you kind of look at, you know, obviously at this time, Kobashi is like a massive, you know, national hero, basically. Like, he's one of the most over, like, Japanese dudes that they've got. The crowd's got this, like, amazing connection with him. So if he's going to be, you know, losing to Vader to, you know, establish Vader for this, you know, massive, big-time headlining run that Vader's going to go on to, you want to do it in a way to where, you know, Kobashi doesn't look weak in the loss.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You want it to be in a way where Kobashi's still, like, the crowd is like, all right, we still love him and he's still, you know, a really, you know, strong, badass dude. And I thought they did that so well in having him both get to, you know, kick out of that crazy out of control Vader assault, the big, you know, Vader off the ropes, Vader bomb. He hit him with that twice, right? And then he still kicked out. And only then he like goes up onto the ropes and gives that like massive bloody splash off the top that looks like he just murders him. And I just thought it was perfect. Like, it was that kind of like, I guess Vader just kind of like overwhelmed him in a way to where you're just like, yeah, I could see that happening.
Yeah. And so, yeah, like you're saying, it means that Kobashi doesn't look weak for having lost, but like Vader still sort of legitimately beat him for the match. Like he had him done, but like not many other people would have been able to go that far. So yeah, Kobashi still looks strong, but Vader's like the monster that he is.
Yeah, that's tremendous. It was like, yeah, so good, because this is, I guess, probably the last top level run of Vader's career. Like, he did do some awesome stuff after in Noah, when he was teaming with Two Cold Scorpio. Like, I think he had some pretty rad matches with Misawa in like the early days of Noah. But in terms of like his last like proper, you know, absolute, you know, great run, I think this was probably the start of the end for Vader. But man, what a bloody match. I sing Vader's praises all day. But like, yeah, I just cannot understand having a dude that's that good and how you know, poorly they used him at the time in WWF before this. Wild.
Yeah, well, I get to be in the fortunate position where I'm just watching it from later on, so I'm just going to watch the really good stuff. Yeah. I don't need to worry about how badly it was booked.
Yeah, I think like, that is the way to be. I'm excited for, you know, hopefully get to see some more Vader matches in the future. I feel like it's almost like at this stage I keep up with as much current stuff as I can, and if there's a bit of a gap, I just go back to watching Vader matches. So we'll see how long that lasts.
Yeah, man. This will be how I get my Vader fixes. I'll just be looking at the Chris match of the weeks. I still haven't watched the Vader Sting one, but I'll get to it. But yeah, any Vader in Japan stuff, I'm probably going to be pretty psyched for.
Okay, awesome. And I haven't even touched Vader in UWFI yet. When Vader enters the world of shoot style wrestling, man. Incredible stuff, but man, I had a lot of fun talking about these matches.
Yeah, me too, man. Thank you for inviting me back on. Made sure I did watch them. I usually watch them anyway, but I don't always get to them as quickly as I should. So knowing that I had this as my homework, I made sure I watched the Vader Kobashi. I'm like, that was really good. I really like that. Thank you.
No worries, dude. It's a fun thing for me now. Because obviously I like watching really great wrestling and then getting to talk about it. So then this podcast is just great, because then I get to nerd out about how great these matches are with people. It's like watching like a really good movie and you're just like, how great was that movie?
I've just watched every version of Dune I could see. Oh, wait, no, there's a TV one. But for that reason, I was like, I guess I'm into Dune now. I guess I'm into Dune and Vader and Bryan Danielson.
Ooh. And if in that... On that note of Dune, I, on the other hand, have never watched Dune. I actually held off watching it at the cinema because I originally wanted to see, like, I still haven't seen the first one, so I was originally wanting to catch like the, or, like, not the first one, but you know, the first one of these ones. But yeah, I'm now like, do I just watch it so I can catch that second one in the cinema? I don't know. Initially, when the first one came out, I was like, oh, well, I want to watch the David Lynch one first. But I think he doesn't even really like that that movie. What were your thoughts on the Lynch one?
I watched it after I'd watched the two new ones. So because I watched the two new ones, really, really enjoyed them. And so I'm like, I want more Dune. Let's go back and watch the David Lynch one. And it was okay. There's stuff in there to like, but there's also stuff where you're like, this movie was made like after Star Wars, and so it's a sci-fi made after Star Wars, and yet it looks so much worse.
Oh no.
And it's just it looks more like Flash Gordon, but not without being trying to be that campy thing where it's trying to still be a serious sci-fi movie, but you got these super bright sets and yeah, I don't know. I enjoyed the experience of watching it, but it's not great.
Yeah, I'm very intrigued. I'm kind of holding out for some sort of re-screening of that original David Lynch Dune in some sort of cinema. I feel like that'd be a cool cinema experience, but I'll let you know how I go. I'll probably watch the June 1, I guess, at home, just so I can catch the sequel, while it's still in theatres. But I'll let you know when I do.
It's only five and a half, 6 hours worth of movie all up across the two movies, so you can squeeze it in somewhere.
Why not? All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, dude. I look forward to what match brings you back next time.
Wonderful. Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks, Bradley.
All right. See you later, man.
Bye. All right. There we go. Lovely. Thanks so much, Brad. Man, two very, very great matches. I had a lot of joy of watching both of those and raving about them, in case you didn't notice. But that brings us to the end of our double header, double match of the week edition here. I tried to keep it a little tighter, for like half hour each match, hour in total. That's pretty good level, right? But I want to make sure to thank the fine folks at Social Suplex, socialsuplex.com, where you'll find a bevy of other delightful wrestling podcasts, including Keeping It Strong Style, a great New Japan podcast, All Things Elite, and all sorts of other stuff. So check that out. If you want to check out my stuff, christhings.com.au. Yeah, that's where you can go, and you can buy all of the art. You can buy prints of these matches of the week. You can buy prints of the classic Way of the Blade 1 illustrations. More of those going up every week. All sorts of stuff. We've got calendars. We got mugs. We got original art. We got it all. At Chris Things on Twitter and Instagram, where you'll be able to keep up with all my newest stuff and hopefully more in-person events that we've had going on of late. Hopefully that continues on. I just want to say a big thank you to you, as always, for listening through to this show. I very much appreciate it. If you do dig the show, please tell a friend, recommend it, give it a little review ski. Let's keep doing this thing. But I think that's about it for this show. I think let's see who we've got coming up in the future for our next curator guest. I got some ideas. All right, I'll catch you guys later.